This episode of the Android Central podcast is brought to you by Canary, a new approach to home security. Canary is a complete home security system packed into a single device. Unlike old systems, Canary is built to learn. Whenever it detects something out of the ordinary in your home, Canary sends alerts with high-definition video and audio straight to your phone. That way you can keep an eye on your kids or your pets while you're stuck at work, you can find out the oven was left on before it's too late, or you can stop burglars with a swipe of your finger. Pick up your Canary today when you visit meetcanary.com/AC. Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the Android Central Podcast. It is episode number 246 for Friday, July 24th, 2015. I'm Phil Nickinson. I run Android Central if it is your first time joining us. If it's not your first time joining us, you know who I am. This is going to be kind of a different podcast, and it's kind of exciting for me because I'm not on it. And honestly, that's kind of one of the cool things about working with, you know, Jerry and Alex and Andrew and Russell and everybody is that they can take things over sometimes, and I can take a week off. So we got a really cool show coming up. I actually just finished listening to it before I'm recording this intro. They've got Dr. Joe Cohen from Austin, Texas on, and he's a pediatrician, kid doctor, and answers some of these really important questions I think we have, kind of expanding on virtual reality and the talks we had last week. My kids use Google Cardboard all the time. They love it. My kids thought Google Glass was one of the coolest things they've ever seen. But one of the big questions is, how safe is this stuff for kids? How long should they use it? And, you know, we tend to use technology as sort of a babysitter, and I'm as guilty of it as anybody. But it's really interesting to hear from a doctor, somebody who actually knows what they're talking about, just how good or bad this stuff is, how much we need to worry about it, what ages are safe for kids to start dabbling in this VR stuff. So have a listen. Russell and Jerry and Dr. Cohen did a great job here, I think. Really fascinating podcast. And real quick, before we get going, again, we're recording this putting it out on Friday on the 24th. On the 27th and 28th, we've got some events coming up. So we've got the OnePlus 2, we've got Motorola on the 28th, so the podcast next week's probably not going to be on Friday either. I honestly haven't figured out exactly what we're going to do yet, but we want to, you know, cover all that live stuff as best we can in podcast form and get that out to you probably sooner than Friday, I would imagine. So keep a lookout for that. If you've been sending in voicemails, please continue to do so. We will catch up on those in a couple weeks. I think we got three for this week that we're just not going to play on this podcast, but we will save them up. We will absolutely answer your questions. Maybe we'll even put them out separately. I don't know. We'll figure that out. Just record your question, send it to podcast@androidcentral.com, and we will get to it. And with that, I'm going to shut up and let Jerry and Russell and Dr. Joe Cohen take it away.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Android Central podcast. I don't actually know what episode this is because we're recording this at a time that is going to be different from when most of you hear it. And Phil will hopefully have corrected that before you hear this, which is kind of counterproductive for me to be saying it. But anyway, we've kicked out Alex and Phil and Andrew so that we can talk for a little bit with Dr. Joe Cohen about how we look at things like Google Cardboard and the Samsung Gear VR and some of these other smartphone-based virtual reality things as it applies to children. So, Dr. Joe, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I've been looking forward to it.
We also have Jerry, who is going to help me ask as many intelligently sounding questions as possible.
You put Jerry and intelligent sounding in the same sentence, and I'll try to live up to that.
All right, so Dr. Joe, can you just start off by telling us a little bit about yourself and kind of what you do in your day-to-day life?
Absolutely. First of all, thanks so much for having me. I live in Austin, Texas. I've been here since 2002. I'm a board-certified pediatrician, and my practice is in Austin, Texas. We have 6,000 patients and two pediatricians, and we've been open for 10 years. Right now, my day-to-day is doing a lot of sports physicals and checking for scoliosis in all my kids. I'm also the founder of Kiddo EMR, which is a pediatric health information technology company. We're more of an EMR data API and health exchange type company with IoT support. And that's been taking me to many different places, including DC was the last time I saw you guys. And we are also co-founding the company in London to address our European clients called Unificare Limited, which is in, based on Buckingham Palace Road in London, England. My day-to-day is pretty variable these days as Kiddo EMR gains momentum and traction in the industry and in the tech community. So I try to see my patients as much as I can, but the other time I'm doing blogs, meetings. My managing director would tell you we talk across the ocean every single day, so my sleep schedule is a little bit off. But otherwise, I'm just doing what I'm trained to do and also taking advantage of this amazing revolution in technology that we're experiencing today.
Yeah, and you're genuinely a big fan of a lot of this technology. You're a Google Glass Explorer. I've seen you use, I think, at least two different Android Wear devices. You definitely are a fan of technology in general, it seems.
Well, first of all, I grew up loving Star Trek. I've seen every movie in the theater except maybe the bad one. I think Star Trek V. I'm not sure, but and you know, a lot of what we do. I mean, like, this is the closest thing I'll probably ever see to a tricorder. Although you know, recent news and certain things coming out of California make me think otherwise. It's just, you know, I had an Apple II, and this thing blows it out of the water. And I love to try new things, and thankfully, you know, I am able to, you know, get a new phone pretty often, and I feel very fortunate. I really, when I see my kids playing with, when I see my kids playing with the technology that we have in the office, I just envy them, because imagine what they're going to have.
It's definitely going to be cool when they are having the same conversations that we're having now about laser projected somethings. One of the biggest conversations over the last couple of years has been children using technology. And you know, there's a lot of conversations about whether they're using it too much or using it too little. And a lot of those conversations kind of get sidetracked. But I kind of raised an eyebrow at Google I/O this past year when Google announced that they were taking their virtual reality platform and repackaging it for classrooms. You know, there was going to be, you know, Google Cardboard for Education, where kids were going to be able to, you know, go on these virtual field trips, and there was going to be these programs where teachers can kind of control what it is that kids are seeing and kind of guide them through these things. And part of me was fascinated, but the other part of me was a little concerned, but I think I kind of lacked the language to express that, and that was why I was so excited that you were able to join us today, because you are both a pediatrician and kind of a techie guy, so I think you probably have a reasonable impression of what's going on here.
Yes, once again, I was smiling because amazing what they have. We may see the end of the field trip as we know it, where you actually have to go to the place to see it. And yes, I think that it's important for us to investigate new ways to teach our children, you know, and I'm very glad to be able to lend my expertise in the developing retina and the brain and the child in general, to this discussion. And I think that what Google's been doing for education has been underreported, and yet I take care of a lot of teachers' kids, so they all have Chromebooks. They all use Google Classroom. Their parents all have emails connected to their teacher. And I think that this Google Expedition, which is this project to bring it to school, is just one more step in revolutionizing the way that we talk and teach our children.
I agree. I'm sure there's a monetary aspect, but I think that there are people at Google who are just plain passionate about teaching kids, and it shows.
I know definitely, you know, my kids, you know, they're very familiar with Chromebooks, and not because they're here around the house, but because, you know, they're used in school, you know, all day, every day for a lot of different things. But it seems like there's probably a pretty big difference between using a Chromebook and putting a phone behind a pair of biconvex lenses and having a kid, you know, stare into that for a while.
Yeah, I think that we have to see if the benefits outweigh the I want to say risks. The community is not really well researched. There's not a lot of data on the use of what we call stereoscopic 3D in children. And the long-term data is really what we need to see. Similar to like LASIK when LASIK was released, you know, a lot of people went to get it right away, even though they didn't know that maybe 20 years down the line there may have been a problem. You know, I think the FDA is required to do a medical procedure for, I think, like 5 years, but I'm not sure. But the thing that I'm saying is that I think that they're certainly probably safe to use in schools, but there may be other practical things like injuries from walking into the wall. I mean, I have the Oculus, and I fell over many times. Well, you know, and even off the chair a couple times. I don't know how that makes me sound. But, you know, I think that there may be some infection control issues as well. And we can get into more of those later as we go. But I think, first of all, when we look at the benefits, imagine what they're going to be able to see. Imagine how enriched their lives are going to be.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the coolest things that's coming along with this is Google's partnership with Mattel. For what is essentially a relaunch of the ViewMaster.
It looks awesome.
Yeah, it looks so cool, and a big part of that, which Google's been kind of shy to talk about so far, are these little NFC tokens that look like the you know, ViewMaster discs that are going to have, you know, the kind of transit tutorials that are gonna happen on there. And as I look at that entire thing, it just really blows me away as how cool that's going to be when my kids get to use that.
It's really nice to see gaming technology being used towards education, because we hear just tons of negative about games and kids using games.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of this, you know, this experience is definitely going to have a lot of, you know, positive behavior to it. I mean, this is, you know, exploration on a level that a lot of kids, you know, even with, you know, the one or two field trips a year, you know, aren't really going to be able to have outside of this experience. And a lot of what we saw with Google's, you know, Chromebook push for education was, you know, giving kids access to computers that, you know, they wouldn't ordinarily have, or they wouldn't have in such volume. So I definitely think that the concept in and of itself is good. I just, part of me looks at, you know, a lot of the talk about 3D in general not being particularly safe for kids under certain ages. And that I think is where I'm curious as to how good an idea this is.
Hmm. Well, you know, like I said, there's not a lot of long-term, several-decade data on the safety of these types of 3D displays of stereoscopic 3D in children. but a lot of the American Optometric Association did come out with a guideline and answers for parents about safety of 3D and 3D wearing 3D glasses, not necessarily referring to VR, virtual reality, but more into how they are perceiving a 3D image using stereoscopic glasses. And the data contradicts the caution or the advice that companies are giving their customers, and I believe that's to err on the side of caution.
Can you talk a little bit more about that, what some of the cautions are there?
Sure. Well, you know, the human is born with very poor vision, and it takes about 3 years for the visual pathways to solidify enough for a child's visual acuity to be established. Stereoscopic vision, which means seeing a different image based on the right eye versus the left eye, is what gives us the ability to perceive depth. For instance, birds that are prey tend to have their eyes on the side of their head, so they can see all the way from the front all the way to the back, but they have very poor stereoscopic vision because the overlay of their visual fields isn't very deep. But then you have predators and humans that have their eyes in the front, because they don't need to see what's behind them, with a very large overlay of the visual fields. And there, we have very good depth perception. What the 3D displays are doing are somehow presenting a slightly separate image to your right eye and your left eye. That's either with polarization, like passive lenses, active shutter glasses. Basically, the screen is flashing a left image and a right image, and the dynamic glasses are blocking out the eye that's not supposed to see that image, and that happens really fast, so your brain puts it together. And then you have the virtual reality devices or things like cardboard, where these lenses basically undistort a distorted image of a stereoscopic image, like a right dominant, a left dominant image, and your brain puts it all together again. So that the fact that our stereoscopic vision, it develops so early on in life, by three, it's generally agreed upon that those pathways are solidified. However, many ophthalmologists that I know and also in the literature have said that usually 8 or 9 is when there's cemented pathways in the child's eyes and brain. Because remember, the brain is responsible for most of your perception and the way that you actually see things.
Now, is there concern that it will interfere with the way the brain recognizes what your eyes are seeing as much as any effect on the focus of the eyes? I mean,
that's a very valid question. And a lot of times in medicine, we try to base caution or advice based on a disease process that we already know about. And there's a condition in children called strabismus, or a lazy eye. And, you know, we were always taught in medical school and residency that when a child has a lazy eye, the image isn't falling properly on the retinal map of cells that they have because they're not focusing both eyes properly. And it's very well known that if you don't correct that by ages 8 or 9, the child then has something called amblyopia, which is a retinal blindness on the eye that couldn't focus properly. So I think that that's where this age of 8 and 9 for concrete pathways is probably the most credible caution that I could recommend for teachers trying to implement VR in their classrooms. Then you look at this level of maturity and, you know, and the caution of being able to sit down. But there are other concerns as well. But to answer your question, I think that, you know, by looking at another disease process, I believe we should use that as evidence to do more research and also see what's best for our kids. Remember, we can't undo brain development. Right. Once it's done, it's done.
Fascinating.
Thank you.
Now, the way that cardboard is set up, the way that you described it, it's, you know, kind of a warped version of a stereoscopic image. So is it reasonable to use the same kind of caution that you would use for, you know, regular stereoscopic technology, like, you know, red, blue 3D glasses for a theater, or gray, clear 3D glasses for a theater, and something like the Nintendo 3DS?
Yeah. You know,
those same levels of caution apply to something like cardboard.
You know, I was looking back at the 2011 articles about the Nintendo 3DS and what they were recommending, and it was really kind of an assertive statement from Nintendo saying that they believe that it's harmful and that they don't want their children under, I believe it was, to use it for more than half an hour or to turn off the 3D display for extended period of use. What we do know is that eye strain is much more frequent in a handheld device versus a display mounted on the wall or a movie screen. So I think that there's another dimension to the use of these types of technology that we should be studying a little bit more before we commit to a widespread process. I think the fact that the rollout would be pretty slow and children's exposure would be pretty minimal, you know, it's always important to think about relative risk, you know. You know, I'm sure you have to always say, well, how dangerous is it to drive on the bus to school? You know, is it, and then how dangerous is this activity? If the risk is minimal enough to be relative to something that we accept in our children all the time, then, you know, it should be acceptable.
So for the most part, you're talking about, for a lot of the examples, like the example that you gave with Nintendo and some of the warnings from ophthalmologists, it sounds like, you know, above the age of 10, the use case could be considered pretty similar to what you would consider safe for an adult.
Yes, I believe that, you know, 8 to 10, by then, you know, I think that the children will be able to not only have the emotional maturity to handle and be controlled in a situation like that, but also it would be safe. But the one thing that doesn't change over the years is the eye strain and the motion sickness. So, I've seen kids with iron stomachs, and I've seen kids that throw up on the way into the office. So, I mean, just imagine having 60% of your kids start vomiting. You know, that's a mess. Or if they fall off their chair and hit their head, there are certain things that, you know, keep your hands and feet inside the cabin at all times. But the caution from the corporations has continued. So Samsung in 2014 said the Gear VR is not for anybody under 13. And Oculus, in their documentation, say the same thing. And I think a lot of that's been fueled by this air of caution, but also kind of by what Nintendo did. And it doesn't help that the French Health Agency is now banning it in their country for anyone under 13, which I think is a bit extreme.
The emotional and maturity part, I think we overlook that a lot, because when you mentioned that, I immediately saw my 8-year-old self back in the second or third grade with a cardboard box on my face that made me blind, and all of my friends in the same situation. And that would not be a pretty sight if you had a bunch of unruly kids. And I just think that that's something that probably we should worry more about than anything else. These kids in the classroom all potentially blinded to the outside world and how they will act. And that's just something I never thought of before.
Interesting. I think that, you know, you have several 8-year-olds. You have young 8-year-olds and you have very mature 8-year-olds. But I think that these are questions that need to be answered, mm-hmm. But are easily solved. You know, we don't have to do a large double-blind placebo-controlled study to wait 20 years to see what their visual acuity is. imagine how wonderful of a tool it would be for an assignment.
Right.
Where the children are required to document on a worksheet what they saw through the virtual tour they went on. It just blows my mind, especially because my favorite thing to do on Oculus and Cardboard is to go look around the solar system. And that's just fun.
The space trip is definitely a lot of fun. There's a couple of the 360 videos that are up on YouTube now that you can look through Cardboard that are tours of really incredible places.
Amazing.
Yeah, just amazing. Definitely cool stuff.
You know, go ahead.
You brought up germ transmission earlier, and we kind of glossed over it. And I just glanced down at my Cardboard unit, and I remembered when you brought it up earlier, something that both of our you know, Cardboard version 2 units have in common is the stain.
The grease patch. Foreheads.
Yeah, the grease patch on the front. So, I mean, that's something that, you know, is pretty, you know, universal for Cardboard, especially the ones that are actually made of cardboard. I have one that's made of vinyl that doesn't have that particular issue. But, you know, that's a potential issue. You really kind of have to give one to a kid and have it be theirs.
Yeah. I remember at I.O. that they were talking about a plastic that they were going to construct. Wouldn't it be great if Mattel said, you know what, you pay for half, we pay for half, and they all get Viewmasters again?
Yes.
Boy.
Yeah, I mean, that would be incredible if Viewmaster ended up being kind of the default for that. That would make me pretty excited.
They better make the button that janky lever on the side. That's all I say. It's just do the same thing. That springy, handle.
Kids need to learn the struggle.
But give them all a Commodore 64.
But now, the risk of any type of... I'm looking for a word here that doesn't sound scary, but I'm just going to use contamination. If I'm sick and I use cardboard and then you use it behind me, there's no greater risk there than any other object that may have touched my face, correct?
well, I think it's any object that's touched you in general. excuse me. There are recommendations. The Expand glasses that have been in classrooms for a long time, they're capital X, P-A-N, capital D. They're made with antimicrobial plastic, and they have a cold disinfecting system between each use that comes with their educational kit. There's others that use cabinets that shine an ultraviolet light down on the on the glasses between uses. But the staff is a big concern. But again, the kids are sharing pencils, and, you know, so it's a relative risk we need to be thinking about, not an absolute risk.
I posed my question poorly. Just because it's closer to the eye doesn't make it a higher risk.
Oh, the eyes are wonderful petri dishes, and it would probably be a wildfire pink eye. I don't know.
Oh, dear.
And from my opinion, I'm like, oh, business. No, from my opinion, it's treatable, and, you know, most kids do well. But kids are really good at sharing germs.
Yep.
Not their toys, but germs, crazy. Which is probably more of a credit to the germs.
We are going to take just a quick break, and then we're going to come back. If there are questions in the Q&A, we're going to address that, and then we'll see what else happens.
At this point, everyone understands that in the right situations, open source software is important technology. It's useful and powerful. No one really disagrees with that. I mean, the most successful open source project of all time is a little thing you might have heard of called the Internet. Tim Berners-Lee put the www in the public domain. Then, of course, there's Berkeley Unix, TCP/IP, BSD Linux, Android, the Internet of Things. You get the picture. The only real disagreement is whether open source can be used in an enterprise situation to do the most important work. Red Hat has been settling this debate one customer at a time for over a decade. They started with Red Hat Enterprise Linux, and today they certify and support application development, storage, and cloud infrastructure for every conceivable enterprise deployment. The New York Stock Exchange, DreamWorks, each and every airline, healthcare company, and telecom giant in the Fortune Global 500, they all rely on Red Hat. In fact, more than 90% of all the companies in the Fortune 500 are Red Hat customers. Why? Because they get the powerful, constantly improving innovation of open source without the risk of having to do it alone. It's that simple. Red Hat, enterprise software trusted in the world's most demanding data centers. Find out what they can do for yours at redhat.com.
So, Dr. Joe, you're kind of making it sound like this isn't going to be a big deal and that it's going to be really awesome for kids to experience and that there's not a whole lot of reason to be concerned about kids going blind or, you know, I mean, there's a little bit of concern that you just raised about there being pink eye everywhere. but otherwise, this seems like it's going to be a pretty good deal. Like, it's not going to be that unsafe or anything like that, which is cool.
Well, I think that there are the practical issues. Well, I think we should talk a little bit about motion sickness, and we should get to that. But really, I think it's, first of all, remember that our children live in very diverse communities, and the schools are usually a very microcosm of the very community that they live in. In some communities, I mean, kids are already using the Gear VR. They know how to use it. They know they should sit. They know where the buttons are. Their parents have endorsed it. They may have one of their own. While in some communities where device penetration is lower because of socioeconomic features, they may need more introduction to the device. So I think that, you know, for us to say that our kids are honestly going to be oohing and aahing that if a VR device shows up at their school one day, like they've never seen it before, I think is certainly incorrect. They're going to probably know what it is and probably either have one or have used it actively. I still see 5 to 6 3DSs a day. And the 3D ones too, which I can't see, but they can. I guess I'm getting too old.
I think maybe a lot of that is like before, I think back to my 8-year-old self and how I would ooh and ah over that kind of technology and forget that our children are growing up with this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's why it's a bigger deal to Russell and I than it is to our kids.
Absolutely. You know, I always tell my parents, you know, your child doesn't know anything about the world. You know, when you bring the little baby home, they think they have to go back to the hospital and they're going to start rebelling, you know, as an older child, that someone's taking their space. You have to tell them, no, you're going to stay here. They don't know. You know, we don't truly sit into their perspective as newcomers, because we remember the way we experienced childhood. Mm-hmm. And they have a tremendous – the intuitiveness that I see with the iPads in the office blows me away. Minecraft, I could cover my living room floor, go up the stairs, and still not make anything as cool as these kids are doing. And they can do it inside a little window, make this giant expansive world. I can't do that. And I do own Minecraft, by the way. I do. I've tried. Because it just looks so cool. I mean, they're Legos you never have to clean up. But, you know, they're certainly going to fall right into it like nothing ever happened. And, you know, all of the speculation and the caution is going to come from the adults. But I think it's fun. And I think that, you know, one of the things we need to think about is motion sickness.
So you brought that up a couple of times now, the idea of motion sickness for a lot of VR products. And I mean, it's pretty much all of them. There's a degree of motion sickness. I've tried the HTC Vive and the Oculus Rift and the Gear VR and Cardboard and a couple others. And that's a big deal when the image moves with you. You feel that inertia, and it does kind of come with a degree of motion sickness. So how big a deal do you think that is with kids?
I think it might be the biggest deal, to be honest. I see motion sickness in children all the time. Well, first, let's talk about what motion sickness is. Your ears have what we call semicircular canals that have little hairs that move as you move. And the neurons actually could tell what position the hairs are moving. And so with the acceleration, deceleration, and rotation of your body, your brain reads how your body's moving through space. So, okay, well then why are we getting motion sick? Well, have you ever gotten motion sick while you're driving your car? Guys?
I don't think I have.
Not while I'm driving, no.
Right, and the reason is because your body's controlling the car, and your brain knows exactly what the car is going to do. Your hands are on the wheel, you can feel when the car is going back and forward, side to side, and those subtle motions are consistent with what your semicircular canals are feeling. Now, a passenger, especially one in the back seat, doesn't know, and they're the ones that are most risky. And so their brain thinks the car's doing one thing, and they're actually doing something else. And that's where motion sickness comes. So now imagine you're sitting still, and you have a VR headset on, and you're going on a roller coaster, and your brain's seeing what your eyes are seeing, and thinking that you're going down a big hill and up a hill, and it's changing your blood pressure and your vascular tone to keep the blood up flowing to your brain, and constricting the capillaries in your skin as a fight or flight response, secreting adrenaline, but you're not moving.
So I wanna
that's ask, where the sickness comes from. Yes,
I your body actually changes. If you're on your virtual roller coaster, your body actually emits the same response as if you would have been on a real roller coaster. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that in some aspects, yes, it will.
Wow.
You know, I read a great article about when is virtual reality going to kill someone to death or scare them to death. I mean, I know that I went through an Oculus, and I was an Oculus demo that was going through a coal tunnel, and people would come out and scare you. And I was genuinely scared. That's a mm-hmm. hormonal change in your body. Excitement's a hormonal change in your body. Is this, is it medically significant? No. Is it physiologically significant? Yes, absolutely. And so when your brain is not in conjunction with your body, you get that what you call noxious response, and you have to vomit, because your body automatically thinks first it's being poisoned, so it makes you vomit everything out. And then you have drops and raises in your blood pressure that cause you to gray out a little bit at times as well. But I think that, you know, one of the best examples of how your body controls itself in response to what it's seeing is if you've ever seen the early films of people going on roller coasters using Oculus's dev kit, when you actually see them using it, their leaning this way and that way and back and forth. And that's because their body's telling them to brace themselves against the motion. Remember, your brain sees, smells, tastes, feels, because you're seeing, smelling, tasting, feeling. And it responds in that respect.
There's two YouTube videos for Oculus users that I don't think I'll ever forget. The first is someone was sat down. It was a guillotine simulator.
Ooh.
And it was, really scary stuff. Like the guy was laid down and it was a guillotine simulator and the person wearing Oculus was sitting, you know, in that spot where it fell. And the guy was just terrified. You know, when it fell, he screamed and it just felt that real to him. And the other thing that you brought up was, you know, a lot of the videos for some of the roller coaster rides and stuff like that, where people do, they fall out of their chairs and they, you know, they scream and it feels really real to them. And I think a lot of that has to do with what you were describing. And so, yeah, I guess motion sickness there could be, you know, pretty significant for some kids.
Well, you know, it's all about being a virtual reality. And I think that, you know, most of the optometrists and ophthalmologists that I know, and the American Optometric Association, the American Academy of Pediatrics hasn't come out with an official 3D statement. But they all say that, look, it should be just like seeing the world. That's what our world is. It's two separate images with slightly different angles that hit our brain.
Now, what about situations that you know can't possibly be real? The Google Cardboard demo has wonderful views of chapels and art museums. There's one of them where you're floating through space, and if you look down, you can see down. That upsets me very much when I'm watching. I stop at that point. I know that physically can't be happening, but it makes my body do some sort of reaction. Is that normal, or am I just susceptible? Or am I just a weird old man?
Well, I wouldn't say you're weird. I think, first of all, there are individual differences between people's tolerances. I know people that never go on roller coasters because they would always vomit, and there's people that always go on roller coasters because they never vomit. But, again, it really just comes down to the simple fact that your brain is perceiving motion differently than is actually occurring. And then, again, this noxious response. It hits your what we call nociceptors. Mm-hmm. It causes you to reject what's going on. That's why motion sickness on a boat somewhere is so bad, because you're rejecting it physiologically, and there's nothing you can do.
This is amazing to me. I could listen to you talk about this for hours.
Okay. How's 400 an hour? Is that...
Touché.
No, when it comes to enriching the lives of children, that's why I do what I do. And I think that what we perceive our children need and what they see as what they need is always going to be different. Plus, they're never very cautious, so we have to be cautious for them. But just to say, to be official and medical here, look, this is technology. Just like any other technology, it needs to be used in moderation and sensibly. If you can't leave your room because you're too busy stuck on YouTube, then the technology is hurting you. But if you know how to use it in moderation, and like not at the dinner table, maybe on the bus on the way home, then it's not really harming you. So I think that, you know, the scenarios of these children sitting in a classroom for an hour and a half with these things strapped to their head, I don't think that's what we're seeing. We're going to see short usage scenarios going on a quick trip, maybe smaller groups, I would think. But this is what the schools would do. They would figure it out based on the experience of their population and whatnot.
And I'm sure the schools will consult people like yourself. they're not going to go blind into this.
Well, I guess. They've never really consulted me on their football policy. But
oh, dear. I wanted to give them more credit, maybe.
You know, schools are strapped for cash, and it's also the public schools, they have to go by what the state, well, at least in Texas, they have to go by what the law is. And I don't believe there's a law that says that they have to consult with their local pediatrician, but they do have to use stuff sensibly. I mean, like, you know, like how they would regulate the buses. It's all regulated, but yeah, I mean, if anybody has questions, they can always hit me up on the Twitter or... drop me a line on Google Plus. Plus, Joey Cohen is my personal profile. I'm always available. Kiddo EMR has brought me around the world 3 times this year, and I've met so many people. I got to see you guys again in person at the DC Code Kitchen. I've been elected the inaugural advisory board member for the IDEA, who runs the Big Android Barbecue coming up in Dallas. I believe you guys are going to be speaking there along with me.
That's the hope, yeah, is that we're going to be talking there, and you're going to be doing some stuff with not just speaking, but there's going to be like a whole section for kind of medical tech and Internet of Things as it applies to medical tech.
Yeah, you know, Kiddo EMR is an API company as much as it's a medical record company, and we strongly believe that the Internet of Things is going to give physicians historical information they've never had before on their patients. I'd like to give a shout out to Slow Control. I've been endorsing and publicizing their Bluetooth bottle that's coming up next year. It has a built-in inclinometer. Also can tell the volume, rate of feeding, lump detection, and air detection to help.
You're talking parents. About a baby bottle.
Amazing. Yeah.
Huh.
And they're Slow Control, S-L-O-W, Control X. And so I actually met with them in Paris, and we're working on a direct interface into my electronic medical record platform using our open APIs to present historical feeding data to doctors. It's just a small example as to how, and they'll be there in Dallas at the Big Android Barbecue. They'll be coming from Paris to show their technology. I met them at CES, and they're our inaugural partnership in the Internet of Things space. And we're very excited. So we're starting this MedTech Zone with Aaron Kasten and the group at IDEA, which is the International Developers Education and Advocacy Alliance, or just IDEA, because that's
really good job remembering
say.
That. I've tried so many times. I love you to death, Aaron, but I can't do it.
And we believe that we could become a very strong voice in ethical healthcare development. And that's mainly what I'm doing is, you know, HIPAA scares a lot of people when it comes to technology. And it should because of the fines. But it's very easy, and the repercussions for spreading someone's information, but it's very easy to comply with. And so I've been serving as a resource, and that's will be one of the topics and one of the talks I give is, you know, an introduction to healthcare privacy and how to develop your applications properly to comply with the law. So that's been very exciting. I want to give a shout out to Aaron and Corey and John and everybody. I can't say everybody over at IDEA. I just got elected this past week, and it's truly an honor. And I can't wait to see what we do with that. If anyone's interested in speaking at Big Android Barbecue, the signups did go out yesterday, and their website is IDEAA.io.
Definitely. I want to jump over to Q&A just for a little bit because we've actually got a couple of questions there that I think are pretty good. We'll just start from the top. Chris Vukin, sorry if I butchered your last name. Do you feel that tech companies may be using the classroom consumers as unwitting research subjects? And if so, do you feel that there's a better way to release these types of products to classroom environments that optimize the safety of the children?
I don't think I have to be a doctor to answer that question. I think that corporations take advantage of their consumers every single day, regardless of the field. Is that absolutely the case? I don't know, but the corporations' jobs are to make money. So what do you guys think?
I'm not convinced that they are unwitting research subjects. I think that's something you brought up earlier is that, you know, kids are diving into this kind of tech at a faster rate often than we are as adults. And I mean, like I know my kids are really familiar with Google Cardboard. I know that most of the kids that, you know, come to play with them are already pretty familiar with the idea. So I know that it is new technology, and putting it in the classroom will expose students who have not seen it before. But I'm not sure I would go so far as to call them unwitting research subjects.
See, I just want to be an optimist. I want to hope that for every person in an office somewhere counting pennies, there is at least one other person in that company who is, feels good about the tech and wants it to be better for the kids.
Yeah, I think I have to rebut because I wasn't being all negative. I was just being hypothetical. I think that, we at Kiddo EMR, we have really been bolstered by our audience, which are the children. And I think that's a very important question to ask. I think that it's a very important that we advocate for their safety and for their education. You know, so many times we're trying to prevent harm. We're never actively working on enriching them. It's, you hand them the phone when they're bugging you and you're waiting in traffic. You can't. It takes a lot of money and time for a two-parent home that's working, or a single parent, or any parent home, to enrich their child's brain. And a lot of it is costly, and they may not have the time. So I think that this is something that we absolutely have to endorse, but with the caveats of addressing some of the issues that we talked about today, like perhaps there maybe is a developmental concern after a certain age, or below a certain age. What should be the regulation on a federal program using these? And remember, that's a federal program. Schools can't, buy and take in anything without it becoming part of the actual structure. And trust me, the politicians will put their fingerprints all over the final policy. Mm-hmm. But I think that rather than it being malicious that they're being unwitting research subjects, I think that this type of use case scenario will certainly outline the safety, effectiveness, and the benefits of using this type of technology, and if there's unforeseen consequences as well.
Our next question comes from Roxanne Riskin. Children who have some kinds of visual disabilities or even physical disabilities, how is virtual reality going to become ADA compliant in school systems? As an educator, there are many reasonable questions to ask and discuss.
First, I have to say, hey, Roxanne. Roxanne is a very active Google Glass explorer. She wrote Glass on the Beach, a great book I have in my office.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yes. Worked with Rick Serra on Glass Alphabet. She's a brilliant educator herself, and I know that she's been hanging on every word, hoping that I would endorse the use of cardboard in her classroom. And I say, go for it, Roxanne. And I think that, yes, when it comes to disability, one of the things we didn't talk about is that kids with amblyopia, or some kids who have visual problems that make it so they can't appreciate stereoscopic vision. So, I think that we have to ask, okay, how politically correct do we need to be? Is it that they need to come up with a specific device for every person's condition, or is it going to be like at the amusement park where the person in the wheelchair that goes into the virtual theater sits in and is able to enjoy it but doesn't have the rumble seat or it's not moving all around, but they still are able to enjoy it. So I think that if we faithfully try to include everybody, then I think the experience can be preserved for the majority.
I think actually another point to bring up in this, the platform isn't out yet, so I can't say for sure, but one of the things that we've seen in similar programs is to have host devices that are showing the content on a single screen that's not split and therefore doesn't have to go into cardboard. So that child would maybe just be holding a phone or holding a tablet and would just see that experience through a regular exploratory video instead of holding cardboard up to their face.
Absolutely, and I think that we totally blow by in this discussion because it's one topic, but we're totally blowing by just how amazing it is on your computer to cruise past Mars and go down the Via Dolorosa in Jerusalem, or my parents get tech advice from me, go figure, right? and I say forget the apps, screen pin Google Earth. They will be there for hours, and it's always they're coming in, they get to see things. And that's on a tiny little screen that's usually cracked because kids throw their phones. Again, back to Kiddo EMR, but just one of the things is it's given me so much time with my patients. For about 5 minutes each visit, We sit and watch YouTube where I talk about Pluto recently. We've been talking about Pluto, where we go and we look at something on Google Maps or Google Earth, and or I'll teach them how to do search, where I'll be like, okay, I say, okay, Google. Oh, sorry. show me pictures of trains. So they could sit there. So the parents will come back and they say, we talked about that at the dinner table last night, and it was a great discussion, you know. Or they'll come back and they say, yeah, I see him at the Chromebook in the kitchen always saying, okay, Google, show me pictures of Mars. And he sits there for hours and learns, and then we hear about it all at dinner. So I think that these are the experiences that really outweigh very thinly veiled corporate recommendations on erring on the side of caution that say under 13, no way. I think that just like no one sells cell phones to kids because there's still a doubt about brain tumors in the cell phone use, and just like that, they're going to err on the side of caution to save their bottom lines. And should they? I don't believe so after age 8. That's my bottom line right there.
So really, I mean, the bottom line ends up being, you know, Google's, you know, their product safety information, which is on their website, is pretty reasonable. I mean, it's you know, take frequent breaks while using cardboard. If you experience nausea, discomfort, eye strain, or, you know, disorientation, immediately discontinue using cardboard. Don't use it without adult supervision. Don't use it while driving. And I got to say that those words need to exist. If you're using Google Cardboard while behind the wheel of a car, I just don't have words. Walking or otherwise being distracted from real-world situations that prevent you from obeying traffic or safety laws. And if you have had or could be prone to seizures, consult a doctor before using cardboard.
You know, that's one thing we should talk about. Like, for to go back to Roxanne's question, someone with a seizure disorder would probably be barred from using cardboard. Or if on medication that lowers the seizure threshold in their brain, which means, in plain English, means makes it easier for their brain to go into seizure. Those kids would be have a disability that would contraindicate the use, and if the flat panel or conventional display had too much flashing, that would also be a concern. You know, it's funny, in London, when you watch the news in England, it'll actually warn you before a piece that says it has flash photography. Apparently, it's a bigger problem over there than, you know, and we call that photosensitive epilepsy, PSC.
Yeah, you definitely don't see warnings like that over here, but that's a really good point.
Public welfare is very, very big on their concern for them, especially data privacy and health and safety. Like, you can't get fish and chips in newspaper anymore because of health and safety.
All right, we have one more question, which I think we can probably all three answer the same way, but I'm going to bring it up anyway. Joel J., isn't this issue similar to the myth that watching too much TV would turn your brain into mush? Might be mostly a concern about extreme pixelation of content. Would higher resolution 4K or higher displays for VR make it better for kids? I think the problem is more the lenses and the way the information is displayed, not so much the quality of the display, but I figured you would probably...
Well, you know, a little trivia, you know, they thought your brain would go into mush because that thing had radiation coming out the front of it. I mean, do you ever remember those big TVs that were built into cabinets that were on the floor? I remember my aunt, she turned that thing on, the lights would dim.
Yep.
The picture would slowly come out from the middle and your hair would start standing up on your neck.
Yeah, when as a child, we used to put our arms against it to make the hair stand up.
We had my first job as a system administrator. We had a giant version of those televisions. It was like a 42-inch tube television, and we used it for like meetings and stuff. And we ended up having to take it down because every time we had clients in and we turned it on, that effect would happen, but like halfway across the table that we were using. And it just made everyone really uncomfortable, so we had to replace it with a projector.
The one thing I want to say to Joel is that, yes, too much of anything that isn't the normal human experience, like learning and socializing and being fit and getting out and seeing the world, too much of any technological experience will turn your brain to mush. You're not going to learn. You're going to be totally addicted to electronics. We know that, yes. As for the resolution, yeah, it'll make it better for kids because, boy, is that going to be even cooler.
But the safety concerns would end up being the same. The age, you know, concern
Yes.
You know, and using it in moderation is still the most important thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Dr. Joe, where can people find you on and off the internet?
They can find me in Austin, Texas, London, England. Well, I know what you're saying, but I live in Austin, and I'm also spending a lot of time in London. But I can find me at Twitter at IkeEC, which is in my lower third. I have website, kiddoemr.com, where you can submit any questions or concerns. Which is KIDDOEMR.com. Also on Google Plus at plus Joey Cohen. I think that's what it is. I don't know. I never look at that URL. I feel really guilty. But I'm on Google
Plus. I end up usually having to type in MD afterwards in order for it to show up.
Yeah,
because there's like 9 Joey Cohens that show up when you type it in.
It's plus Joey Cohen MD is what it is. Yeah. But I would love to hear from people and encourage them to reach out. I'd love to. I really like cake face pictures. Today I had several 1-year-olds, and my parents kind of know that I like to see the cake face that they smear all over. Now they should not be using your VR. They'll just put it in their mouth.
Yeah, definitely not a good idea.
Slobber.
All right. Well, as always, we are brought to you by shopandroid.com. You should check out. I think we're doing some cool stuff with G4 batteries this week over there, as well as the case. Jerry, are we carrying that now? The case
yes.
for
the
S6?
The off-grid from Incipio. Yes, we are carrying that now.
It's got a ridiculous battery and a micro SD card slot to add all of the things that your S6 doesn't have.
Wow.
So you can check that out if you want it. And that's going to be it for us. Jerry, Dr. Joe, thank you very much for coming and doing this with me.
Thank you.
And Dr. Joe, it's always a pleasure.
Oh, I can't wait to see you guys again.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Yes. And anytime, I'm always available to be on the show. I really enjoy reaching out to the public.